Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Nau mai, whakarongo mai ki te Aotai Whenua. Welcome to Country Life. I'm Sally Round.
Great to have your company. I'm Duncan Smith. Today, a Manawatū farmer with plenty on her plate, looking after stock, working as an artificial insemination technician, and helping out at the local stockyards. It's all in a day's work for Sarah Maxwell.
And if that's not enough to make you go phew, imagine riding on horseback for days on end through the rugged South Island backcountry. Well, it was a dream come true for our guest this week.
And later, from the backcountry to a beach on Banks Peninsula, farmers taking a break and learning how to surf.
But first, let's check in with Susan Murray in Kirikiriroa, Hamilton. Now, what's been happening on the rural news desk this week, Susan?
First up, the state-owned farming company PAMU, other words Land Corp, it's been given a bit of a rattle-up by the government. The Minister for State-Owned Enterprises, Paul Goldsmith, met with PAMU and it's told the executive he's just not happy with the company's performance. Last month, PAMU, which has 110 farms around the country, reported a half-year profit of $3 million, but that's a drop from the $15 million profit for the same time last year. So Mr. Goldsmith says he expects all state-owned enterprises to operate as successful businesses, to be profitable and efficient as ones in the private sector would be, and he's not satisfied that PAMU is achieving that.
So what's PAMU said about the criticism?
Chief Executive Mark Leslie described the conversation with Paul Goldsmith as very constructive, and they are focused on driving performance and increasing revenue.
We've acknowledged that we've got some opportunities that exist around continuing to drive farm performance. And it was part of when I came in and we had a little refresh to the strategy, and that really brought farming excellence to the core of it, whether it's pasture management, whether it's reducing stock wastage, or whether it's reproductive performance and things like that. So we talked through some of those areas where we're really focusing. We also talked through the challenges that all agriculture is facing at the moment with the cost squeeze and then returns, whether it's dairy, whether it's sheep and beef, returns being back from where they have been.
Now let's look at these drought conditions at the top of the South Island. Associate Minister of Agriculture Mark Patterson's been on the ground there this week.
Yes, he wanted to really have a look at those dry conditions for himself. Since some of these farms in Marlborough and Tasman, they haven't had any decent rain for 8 months. It's very, very dry. And he says these conditions really are challenging.
Farmers are currently not too bad so far in the sense that it was pretty well forecast. But, you know, now's the tough time when we're getting into autumn, trying to get some feed away for winter, you know, the long grind of feeding out for weeks now, with winter still well away. So it's been a tough time for a concern.
Mark Patterson didn't declare a drought, but he says they will be monitoring the situation. And I guess, Sally, it's worth noting that while this drought is really tough for the pastoral farmers, winemakers in Marlborough say that for the harvest, which is now underway, sure, it's going to be smaller and quick, but the quality is outstanding and they've had enough irrigation water so far. And then jumping up to Northland, the kumara growers there, the harvest is underway and they're saying it is excellent. The supplies are ramping up, orange kumara, adding to the red ones now, they say it's just going to be great. And after last year's disaster when the crop was 70% down following Cyclone Gabriel, it's great that some money is now pumping into that economy.
That's great, isn't it? And another specialty milk sector's in turmoil.
Last week we reported on issues with the sheep milk industry, but now dairy goats, they're also having it tough. And for a couple of seasons now, they've been asked to supply less milk and their payout has halved. And it's just made many businesses financially unviable, a lot of getting out. One Waikato farmer we spoke to says it's just heartbreaking to see things crumbling in this tight-knit community. But the situation is a mess and many feel they can't wait for things to come right. Dairy goat Market Cooperative Chief Executive David Hemmerer says that access to the China market has dried up. China's encouraging its customers to buy local and the birth rate's dropping. So they've got a three-way problem there. And he says the co-op is acutely aware that suppliers are under huge pressure. It's pushing as hard and as fast as it can to develop new markets and new products.
And then in doing that, steadily increase the amount of milk that can be supplied. But that will not be an overnight fix and it will be a grind to work our way forward on all those fronts.
So quite a sad change. Just 4 years ago, the goat milking sector was buoyant and they were actually looking for more suppliers and milk.
Mm. Support is growing to keep the ban of exporting live animals by sea in place.
There have been more than 10,000 people signing a parliamentary petition. They're urging the government not to reverse the ban on these live exports. Dr. John Hellstrom, he started the petition. He's a former National Animal Welfare Advisory Committee chairman. He spent four decades working alongside the livestock export industry as a veterinarian. And he says that reversing this ban on live animals by sea, which came into force last year, would be a mistake.
Well, I'm really sad about it because we've taken a long time to get to the point we're at now where the trade has stopped. And because a few people can make money out of it, we're now talking about reactivating it. People from all over the world are looking at New Zealand and saying, what's going on? You know, you've been world leading in this regard and now you're turning your back on the animals again. And that concerns me. But my primary concern is with the cows.
Dr. Hellstrom says that even setting up exports to a gold standard, it just won't be good enough. The Associate Agriculture Minister for Animal Welfare is Andrew Hoggart, and he says he's seeking advice on amending the legislation and there's no timeline for that at the moment.
Now, the spotlight's on the forestry industry still. The Forest Stewardship Council's come out with some comments about forest harvesting practices on the East Coast.
It has. It's FSC for short, and you'll see its label on many timber products, whether it's greeting cards or a wooden table. And it basically is the organisation that says this tree has come from a forest that has been responsibly harvested. After Cyclone Gabrielle and some storms in 2017 and 2018, huge volumes of slash damaged property and infrastructure on the East Coast. So late last year, the Forest Stewardship Council sent an overseas auditor to Gisborne. It was there to check out the auditing practices of SGS and another company preferred by Nature. These companies audit New Zealand forests on the FSC's behalf. The result was a damning report. It found serious shortcomings in the auditing procedures and it said the businesses are only one step away from having their certification rights suspended. And it went on to say that it's most uncommon to have so many issues with an audit body. So as a result, FSC is getting these auditors to get together and discuss best auditing practices. And it says because of this increased scrutiny, auditing practices in the Gisborne region will improve. And just quickly, Sally, news from the wool carpet maker Brenworth. They're expecting to return to full yarn production by July after damage from Cyclone Gabrielle shut down its Napier plant.
Great news for the wool industry. Thanks very much, Susan.
Country Life, bringing you the sounds and voices of rural New Zealand.
Three horses named Moose, Rasta and Alex have helped make a dream come true for our guest this week.
I'm Carolyn Van Onner. I'm originally from Germany and I've been living in Cromwell in New Zealand for the past 8.5 years. I run a horse tracking business here. About a year ago, me and my very good friend Nikki, we took three of my horses and we rode the length of the South Island of New Zealand on horseback for 3.5 months.
Does it take a lot of planning to do something like that or do you just hop on and go?
It does take a lot of planning for sure. I mean, we were talking about it for a long time, like for years, but the proper planning probably started about a year before we started the journey. And yeah, there was just a lot of talking to people that, you know, do a lot of backcountry horse riding and obviously talking to a lot of farmers and landowners because most of the time we would ride through backcountry and through big stations and all that.
How did the horses take the journey? Were there any problems with them getting lame? And how did they manage steep country?
They were incredible. So the horses are my tracking horses for my tracking business. But what I do at work is very easy, you know, like 2-hour rides for beginner riders, really. So nothing too challenging. They weren't used to river crossings or anything like that, you know, and for that they did really incredible. there were some things that they didn't like. So, for example, my horse Moose really hated the going through little creeks. You know, the creeks where it goes down a little bit and then on the other side it goes up again, which is, you know, not hard at all to do, like, for a horse. But he just hated them. And it would take so long every time to convince him to get over. And then, you know, I would get off and I would try to, like, pull him over. And he just refused for, like, 10 minutes. And then suddenly he would jump on top of me. It happened so many times, like, he hated it. But apart from that, we found it amazing how willing they were to keep going every day. And I think in the beginning it was maybe, you know, like horses do, they try to turn around once in a while and, you know, go back, like, okay, you know, time to go home now. But after a while I think they realized, oh no, there's no turning back, we just keep going every day, you know.
And not so tough for you, I guess, being on horseback. Or are you expending a lot more energy than you would think you would?
Yeah, I mean, it does get exhausting. I mean, it's not only physically, but mentally as well. We would spend usually 8, sometimes even 10 hours in the saddle. Like, your butt gets sore after a while, for sure. Like, usually after at least 6 hours, maybe, we would get off and walk for like half an hour, because it's just, yeah, always sitting in that position. Yeah, and then on the other side, of course, it was always looking at maps and, oh, where do we have to go next? And where does the track go? And, like, we got to turn right soon. And you don't ever stop thinking about what's coming next. And
thinking not just about yourself, but your horses, that would add a lot more pressure to such a journey, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love my horses with all my heart. Like, I would never want anything to happen to them. And that would have been the worst. Like, the thing I worried about most was, what if a horse hurt themselves? Because they can be quite fragile, right? If they hurt their leg and they can't walk anymore, and we're in the middle of backcountry, there's not much you can do. So I was very worried about that. But yeah, it worked out. Everything worked out, and nothing major happened. No major injuries.
What was the scariest moment of the trip?
We had just come down from a saddle, and on that day we were going to ride out back onto the road, and we had to ride on a hiking trail. It was quite a steep hill, and the hiking trail was, like, just wide enough for a horse to walk on, but it was quite steep. And the thing is, like, on tracks like that, we would walk the horses, we wouldn't ride them. Nikki was leading Alex through, and that was fine. And then Rasta was in the middle, and he was meant to follow them. But instead of following them on the track, he went up the steeper bit, and he actually ended up falling over himself onto his back, and fell down this creek bed through, like, a lot of Matagori bushes, those really prickly bushes. And those bushes stopped him from falling all the way down the hill, which was lucky. He was just lying on his back, like, legs spread out wide open, like he couldn't move. We just tied the other two horses onto some bushes and tried to fight our way through the bushes to help him get out of there. And it took us probably like 20 minutes. He was, like, stuck on a boulder with a saddle, thankfully saddle and not his back. But yeah, we had to kind of drag that boulder out of underneath him and tried to help him, yeah, get back on his feet.
He was okay?
Yeah, he was okay. He had a couple scratches, and he was just all over full of these prickles. Took us probably half an hour to clean him up, but then, yeah, he was all right. There were quite a few big river crossings, and that, for me, because we were both not really experienced in that, it was kind of like pure adrenaline when you have to ride through, like, a deep river, and you're not quite sure how deep it's going to be. And yeah, you're just kind of trying to make it to the other side. It was always quite exciting. The farriers we used did such a great job. We only had to reshoe them once on the whole trip. And thinking of the terrain that we were walking on, especially after the second shoeing, there were so many really rocky terrains, you know, riverbeds and swamps and all of that. And the shoes actually stayed on until they were so thin, so worn through, that the middle of the shoe split in half. 3 days before we finished, one of the shoes fell off. When people ask what was the best part of the trip, the first thing that comes to mind is the people that we met along the way and they've got to know, and everyone was just so nice to us and took us in, let us stay, even sometimes cooked us food, and we were just so incredibly grateful. We couldn't have done it without the help of all those people.
Carolyn Van Honor reminiscing about her journey on horseback through the South Island last summer. She and Nikki had a support vehicle for supplies, including hard feed for the horses, which Caro says were vet-checked thoroughly for the trip. They ended up on the beach in Picton, a 1,500-kilometre trek from their starting point at Bluff. Take a look at the images Caro took on our webpage, rnz.co.nz/countrylife.
The farmer we're meeting now has several jobs. She's an artificial insemination technician and farms sheep and beef. She also works at the local sale yards, and as if that's not enough, she's active in her local young farmers group. All this while taking on more and more of the family farm, helping out her father who lost a limb in an accident. I caught up with her checking on stock one afternoon in early summer.
Come on, John. This way. My name is Sarah Maxwell. I'm a farmer from near Fielding in the Manawatū.
Give us a bit of a lowdown of what you've been up to this morning.
Oh, so I left, did my AI run this morning, so I've been around five farms this morning.
And AI is artificial insemination.
Yes,
it's that time of year, isn't it?
Yes, I'm about at my peak of about 3 weeks right now. Everyone's just full on getting nervous about returns, which is a fun activity, but you know, it is what it is. You have to pretend you know what you're doing. I think it must be about 75 this morning, which I think is probably about my average at the moment.
And do you work on your own?
Well, yes, in terms of AI, I work on my own. So there's the odd time where it'll be other people because it's like a big day or something, but 95% of the time it is myself.
Now we are on the farm that your family has here in the Manawatū. Tell us a little bit about it.
I'm sixth generation farmer here. And so we are finishing country effectively. It's like virtually flat. You can see as far as you can really. Finishing lambs through winter. We have a few grazing heifers for fun. Got some cropping, which we're about to put some peas in these paddocks here. I'm trying to figure it out really. Because we've had it back for about 4 years now. And so it is a bit much of just, what are we doing? But we're all learning, aren't we? Learning together.
So it was leased prior?
Yes, leased for 13 years. So we leased it out because my father had an accident where he lost his arm. Because that got to a point where Dad's like, I don't want to sell it. But mentally, he was like, I can't have a town job and let someone else run it, with him being in charge still. So we leased it to the neighbours and they extended their block. And we took it back 4 years ago when I returned to New Zealand because I was overseas. And now I'm faking it till I make it, really.
you say that, but you're the stock manager here on the family farm.
Yeah, actually, I suppose I am. I suppose I do manage or make the overarching decisions. Dad's still very much involved, without a doubt.
So what would you normally do after a morning spent doing AI?
Most often I'll probably go around, check the animals, because I've got a couple mobs of cattle at the moment, like one-year-old Angus and Jersey, sorry. And then we've got a few loitering trade lambs that have decided to have lambs, and that it is actually our quieter period, so we don't have to be dagging lambs or drenching lambs left, right and centre. But I also work at the sale yards in Fielding. So, like, Fielding sale yards are one of the bigger sale yards in the country. So I do, like, the online bidding, so people that aren't physically able to make it to sale yards can still buy stuff, but I'm the one that's in the room physically saying what the bid is, you know what I mean? And so that involves going through and taking photos and writing down all the information at the start. There's a couple of us, we work together, and we're the ones that are physically there being the in-person representation for the online bids.
Being the voice of those people.
Yes, that's the way of saying
that's
it.
That's a fast-paced environment.
Yes. Keeps you on your toes. I think you'd go insane if you did it every day of the week, but for 1 or 2 days a week, it keeps you on your toes.
Use her for work?
Yeah. She's getting there. She's only young still, but she is getting there. And I'm also not the best dog trainer, but I mean, you know, together we're getting there slowly. Nah, she's actually, this winter, she's actually come a long way. She doesn't like Jersey heifers. I don't know. She doesn't care about Angus ones. Doesn't like Jerseys, though.
Particularly Jerseys.
Particularly Jerseys. I couldn't tell you. They're all the same age. They're all the same weight.
We're just moving on to some really lush pasture now.
Very lush. That's why the cattle in here. Yeah, so this paddock is full of clover. What is it? Chicory and grass. To be fair, it looks pretty incredible, I must admit.
It does. It is very lush.
This is the moment we make sure the cattle aren't... Oh, they are stood up. That's good.
They're all hiding there down below. I can see them. A mob of beautiful-looking Angus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what are you doing with these?
So we only bought these 6 weeks ago, just to try and eat some grass and grow fat, grow quickly, hopefully. So one might take some through to being killed, but I might also sell some before Christmas, the lighter ones that won't quite, because I don't really like having big cattle on here in winter because it's so heavy. The soil is very heavy clay soil, and so cattle just make a mess, and it just makes everything worse, you know? People think I'm mad for it. Part of it's also I like just letting some paddocks at least once a year go a bit long just to make sure they've got some roots down. Jen, come here. Jenny, come here. Jenny, come here. Jen, come here. Come here. Come here. Come here. Come here. She just likes chasing animals. Jenny, come here. Jenny. Come here. Good girl.
Now, what are you seeing in terms of prices and how's that affecting what you do?
The sheep is not fun. The sheep situation is not great. To be fair for us, though, we work on margins. We're predominantly lamb trading. Like right now, we don't have any trading lambs on, apart from our own couple of hundred bred ones. As long as we can buy them at a good price and we can sell them, even if the market's average, it's still like, it's the margin we're after, not so much the overall price, which is a bit of a balance in that, because like the season just been, it started off really good in terms of lamb trading, and then July it just decided to nope. And so we did have a bit of a ooh moment.
You bought them in higher than you would have liked.
Yes, but I think that was with everybody, though. That wasn't just a straight-up our problem. That was an everybody problem, you know, or at least in terms of lamb trading around here.
So who makes the decisions around that, you or your dad or both of you?
I feel like it's probably becoming prominently more me, but Dad has still definitely got an opinion. Like, not in a bad way, but he's definitely still...
Well, he's seen it.
He was trading lambs 20 years ago. Like, I mean, he's been there and done it and like knows the systems, doesn't he? So
how has it changed over the years, and what are you seeing, and what are you adding to the business?
Well, I'm adding chickens.
You're adding chickens.
Adding chickens.
Well, we'll get onto that in a sec.
Yeah.
But is there anything else around the actual growing of the stock?
I suppose I'm still learning myself to a certain degree, and that is like what I really appreciate about my dad, is like he is very good at being like, well, this is how I did it. Do with what information you will. Like, he's not very much like, we have to do it this way. Because I think a lot of people, if you go and like, we have to do it this way, they just, defences go up. Whereas I'm very much learning. I'm definitely still learning how this all works.
Sarah, you did go to Lincoln, didn't you?
Yes.
What did you do there?
I did a Bachelor of Commerce in Agriculture. So that was a 3-year degree down in Christchurch. And yeah, learned about business, I suppose. I definitely learned about stuff, but sometimes I'm like, did I?
Was the intention always to come back to this place, to the family farm?
I think it always has been like the long-term game. And I think because I came back here when I just turned 24 when I came back. And part of me even now still thinks I'm like, as a female, there is going to be like, if I ever have family or whatever, there is the physical limitation of having a family. So I'm like, I'd rather get this type of stuff rolling now and add to it over time then start when I was 40 and be like, I feel like I need to retire.
Good planning. You're getting lots of different experience, aren't you?
Oh, for sure. And even in the last 4 years, the business itself has changed.
How's that?
So we did a lot of grazing, like dairy grazing heifers the first 18 months.
And why did you want to get back into the sheep trading?
A, diversity. B, historically... I don't love the idea of having lots of cattle here in winter.
It's not great for the soil.
No, sorry, it's terrible. Like, they just stand, like, as soon as it starts raining, they just stand in a corner and make mud, and they pack a sad. And we still have grazing heifers, but they're more spring weaners and some spring trading cattle. But it's more just trying to find that balance of looking after the soil and looking after the farm while actually making money, because at the end of the day, you need to make money to actually be here. doesn't it? So
look at them. They are all very curious, they're just watching us as we stand here while I interview you.
They were just like, who are these people talking?
Shall we wander back?
Yes. Come on, John. This way. Your pet don't come.
Ross Maxwell's my name. Lived on the farm here all my life, and fifth generation of our family to work this farm. Sarah's the sixth. I'm really proud that she's here to carry on the legacy.
We're standing on the veranda here at your beautiful home. Has it been in the family for a long time?
Yeah, yes. There was just bush here before my great-great-grandparents came here. And they built a little house just adjacent here, but that burnt down. This was built in 1900, or finished in 1900. Well, it started off as bush, and they cut it down and milked a few cows and grazed a few sheep until they got proper pastures and developed into a sheep farm, breeding ewes and cropping eventually.
So you pretty much kept it as your ancestors had it?
Yeah, I suppose it has to a point, yeah, except we're finishing more lambs and only a few breeding ewes and quite a few grazing heifers.
And you're still working on the farm?
Yep, when I'm allowed. To be fair, Sarah probably does, well, she does the majority of the stock work and I do majority of the tractor work.
And Sarah's ideas, your ideas, do they mesh?
Most of the time. Not always. Actually, Sarah's good ideas have sort of carried on what we've been trying to do anyway, just different way of getting there.
It must be great to have your daughter involved.
Oh, yes, very much. Yeah, fresh ideas, younger muscles, always help. And probably the afternoons when there's a big mob of lambs just come off a track and need a drench, it's probably time for me to find something else to do. But leave that to Sarah, to Sarah's department.
Yeah, because you had an accident earlier on, and that
20 years ago. Yeah.
So that would have hindered your farming.
Massive. Life changing experience. So I worked off the farm for a few years, selling machinery and travelling a fair bit with work and things like that. But yeah, the lure of home was on the farm was pretty strong. And so yes, Sarah and I working as a tag team, I suppose.
Back in the paddock among the cows, Sarah explains her plan to produce pasture-raised eggs for sale. She's bringing on a chicken caravan. Hens move around the farm in their solar-powered, self-contained home, doing their bit for the soil.
It's got, like, the perches for them to sleep on. It's got the nesting boxes so they can lay eggs in it. And we've got to feed it outside of it, which is going to be dragged around. But basically the trailer opens up in the morning because it's got four doors on the sides, which automatically open in the morning, and the birds can go out and just eat grass and pasture-raised chickens, effectively. And so you still need to feed them some grain, but they actually scratch around the dirt, and because it's a trailer, you can actually move it around the farm. And so I'm going to be a mad chicken lady soon, we'll see.
And this is going to help the soil as well, you think?
Yes, for sure. And I think that's actually, if I think about it, part of where it originally started. I mean, at the end of the day, 450 chickens on 200 hectares, it's a blip in the ocean. It's not massive, but it's all just kind of, why not? Give it a go. I think I managed to keep cattle and sheep alive relatively all right, so may as well give chickens a go.
Now, are you going to be having a little business selling the eggs from the gate, or what are you going to be
doing
with them? Because they'll be producing quite a lot, won't they?
Yeah, so 450 chickens, it's a lot of eggs a day. More eggs than I can eat. So I'm kind of hoping to be able to, in time, sell them all directly to the customer myself.
This is going to double your workload, isn't it, Sarah?
Yeah, look, we'll get there.
And you say you're part of a regenerative discussion group.
Yes, I've only been part of it for the last couple of years, I think. But yeah, it's basically like farmers around the Manawatu have, you know, just catch-ups and effectively discussion group-style things. But in terms of, like, what can we do to look after the land? And at the end of the day, we all want to make sure we can make a dollar, because that's what you need to do. But it's also just doing it so you're actually being kind to Mother Nature in the same respect, isn't it? So New Zealand as a whole is actually a very regen-style farming practice to begin with. And so it's not saying there's good farmers and bad farmers. It's more just trying to... I'm always open for ideas, basically.
Sarah Maxwell adding another string to her bow at the family farm near Bunnythorpe in Manawatu. You also heard from her father, Ross Maxwell.
Hi, I'm Greg Gimmel from the Manawatu Free Range Robotic Organic Dairy Farm, and you're listening to Country Life on RNZ National.
Hickory Bay is at the end of a steep, winding gravel road on Banks Peninsula, and it's here you'll find Kristen and Rachel Savage's farm. Kristen's a keen surfer, and when Cosmo Kentish Barnes visited last week, they jumped in the side-by-side and headed down to one of Kristen's favourite spots.
Yeah, there's some nice peaks over there.
We've come down to the beach on your farm, and there are some good waves out there today.
Yeah, there's some nice waves there. The tides come in a bit, and it's going to be good later. Yeah, it's 2 to 3 foot and a few peaks.
And on either side of the beach, there are high cliffs.
Yeah, totally. They open up and, they're really dramatic. See them for the first time, people get pretty amazed by them. They're big bluffs, aren't they? Yeah. There's actually a slip from the 2010 quake. Came and landed on a seal colony, apparently. And there's a few cracks up in that paddock. And when we came, we thought, what are we going to call this paddock? Because you can actually see through some of them and see... You can see daylight through them, and my father-in-law said, "Oh, what, how about we call that paddock EQC?" So that's upper EQC and mid EQC up there.
So you've got the land that goes right to the edge of the cliffs.
Yeah, up to the top there. You can see that fence along there. There's a boundary fence, and then we're back up there, up the hill, and out a couple of k's that way, up north. Yeah,
we can see some cattle up on the slopes there.
Yeah, those Speckle Park beefies with calves at foot. 40 odd of those, and they're just chipping away at the grass up there. They look pretty happy.
How handy for you that this farm here has a pretty good surfing beach.
Yeah.
Right at your doorstep.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing.
What's so special about this bay?
Well,
from a surfing perspective?
The swell's really consistent, and you probably only need half a metre of swell to get chest to shoulder high waves, and the prevailing wind is offshore. When I say offshore, but you know, it's blowing back out to sea, grooming the waves. And the way the big cliffs work there, there's a bit of trick of nature, and it makes these waves kind of clean. And so there's plenty of swell and there's plenty of clean conditions, and that combination plus it's a nice peaky bowly waves that come in, which surfers really like.
And tell me about the farm. How much land have you got here?
We've got 500 hectares here that we're farming, and we do some dairy grazing for the home farm in Ashburton. Rach's parents are dairy farming down there, and so we'll graze the young stock. So they'll come as R1s in May, and they'll go home as R2s in calf at the end of April. And I really enjoy the challenge of getting the young stock looking really good and performing really well, and they do so well on these volcanic soils. They come off the peninsula so well. Yeah.
And this is a certified organic property.
Yeah, certified with Biogrow. The people that we bought the farm off, David de Rothschild, he converted it to organics over his 6 or 7 years here, and we were just keen to keep that certification going. Yeah,
he had planned to build some sort of eco retreat here, I believe.
Yeah, it didn't happen in the end. It was probably good. There's a QE2 covenant here on the, this paddock we're in right by the beach.
Yeah.
And I think that was old Kit Gregg's legacy, that there wouldn't be any buildings near the beach. And that's pretty cool, I think.
And you live here on the farm with Rachel and your children?
Yes, yeah. So we've been here 13 years, and we came from Wellington. I was a commerce teacher at Wellington Boys, and Rachel was a flight retrieval ICU nurse, and we were happy as Wellington was home. And I was flicking through a farming magazine at Rachel's brother's place at Christmas one year, like I never do, flicking through Farmers Weekly, and saw the farm advertised, and I knew there was good surf there, and I just pointed at it. I said, that'd be a great eco-surfing business opportunity, eco-tourism kind of thing. And you know, one thing led to another, and we came and looked at it, and yeah, here we are 13 years later with three kids.
But so you didn't know anything about farming?
No, I think we're driving along once, and after we'd looked at it, and Keith said, "Well, who are we going to get to farm it?" And I said, "I'll farm it, and to run it." And so you'll farm it, and yeah, I was just up for a challenge. I probably had no idea what I was getting myself into, but better to be scared than bored, I suppose.
Mm. And Rachel's parents, Keith and Rosemary, are farmers down in Ashburton, that would have been quite handy, having that family advice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, very steep learning curve going from teacher to farmer. And Keith and Rosemary are, yeah, really, really amazing farmers. And I've learnt so much off them, and it would have been, well, impossible. And, you know, I mean, we wouldn't be here without their help. And but, you know, it was kind of like sink or swim, and it worked. There's certainly some times where I thought, what the heck have I got myself into?
When you first got here, did you head straight into the water?
Well, I came here, I thought, well, the first thing you do when you wake up is you go surfing. But, yeah, I probably didn't realise how many jobs there were to do and how many things needed fixing. And it's been a great thing, actually, right through, because it's been a break to be able to go out. And although everywhere you look, apart from out towards the horizon, you're seeing work, it's just such a good way to reset. It actually makes you more productive.
Yes. Yeah. And talking about resetting, every Thursday afternoon, you host the Surfing for Farming initiative.
Yeah, so I...
Here at Hickory Bay.
Yeah, Hickory Bay, yeah. So there's about 25, or probably more, almost 30 now, chapters in New Zealand. And we've been running surf club here for probably 5 years, because I used to bring some of the school kids after school. I helped out for a bit there when they were low on staff to teach at Akarau School, and some of the kids would come surfing with me after school. And it just grew into some of the parents saying, oh, well, why don't we come down and have a barbie one night? And yeah. So that turned into a weekly thing about 5 or 6 years ago. And I had mates from Wellington that surf texting me and saying, check out this Surfing for Farmers thing. So I rang up the national coordinator and said, hey, we'd be happy to open a chapter here and might as well lay it over what we're already doing with Surf Club. So, and I'm sure there'd be some crew keen, and it's a great initiative, and the whole mental health reset thing for farmers, and we all know it's all coming at you with farming. You know, a lot of variables you can't control is probably the main reason it's all-encompassing. And so Thursday nights, we'll get between 10 and 15 each week that come down and surf. And I can see why it's taken off nationwide, because, I mean, I've been involved in surf clubs for 25 years, and it's just got all the elements, you know, food, exercise, and sitting around a fire or a bubby and just chatting, and yeah, it's good.
So that's going to happen soon, because it's Thursday today.
It is Thursday, and the waves are good, and the sun's shining, and the sausages and the steak are all on their way, and we'll get into it, yeah. So we've got to put the trailer on with the boards and tow it down the beach here, ready for the guys, and we've just got to put a break up for these heifers over there. We're just going to give them a bit more to chew on, and they'll be happy as.
Let's do it. Awesome. Kristen is break fencing off some of the paddock. You're making sure that the heifers don't go near these macrocarpa trees.
Yeah, just there's some from the wind a couple months back. We had some bit of a clean up of some macrocarpa, and there's some dead macrocarpa leaves there. And if the in calf cows eat those dead leaves, they're toxic to their calves. So we're always checking the paddock and seeing if there's any macrocarpa that's, you know, a dead branch or something.
Yes.
Otherwise they'll lose their calf, which we want to avoid, and which we do, yeah.
I guess before these macrocarpas were planted, there would have been lots of native trees down here on the valley floor.
Yeah, we've got a few left, actually. Back over deeper in the flats there, there's a couple of matais and kahikatea. Still, there's a few that have held on, or whether they left them, yeah.
Because there used to be heaps of milling that went on down here.
Yeah, the out on the point there, they were going up until the 60s, and then, yeah, the mill here was going late 1800s to early 1900s, yeah. We go around, jump back in the mill, and I'll just let them into this bit. Wait, Andrew. He's just gonna head them off. I'll just tell him to go right, and he'll just pull them through the gate, really. Wait, Andrew.
And he's moving about, what, 20 Friesian heifers?
Yep. Andrew, wait.
Good job, Danger.
Well, okay, Danger. Good boy. Good boy. Get up. Get up in there.
Now, Kristen, what's the history of this land? Who first came here?
Hickory's original name's derived from a hash of Waikato Kikari, the Bay of Angry Waters. So The Māori couldn't land their canoes here, so it wasn't ever settled by Māori. But there was a guy by the name of Harry Head who came in the 1860s, and he was pretty eccentric, and he drove some cattle down and managed to, I mean, it was just super thick bush, and he just apparently just dressed in a sack with holes cut out the sides, and he farmed a few cattle, and they called him the Hermit of Hickory Bay. But yeah, he was pretty pioneering.
Well, those farmers will be getting here soon, won't they?
Yeah, they will. We'd better go.
We've come to the farmyard, and the old shearing shed has been converted into the Hickory Bay Surfing Institute.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I always saw the wool shed as a huge asset, but obviously we weren't farming sheep anymore. And so, you know, with building costs, and it's got a roof and it's dry. And so those wool sheds are pretty cool. Blank canvas.
And you've formed a charitable trust.
Yeah, so the vision statement is creating community well-being and connection through the sport of surfing. So the surfing's a catalyst, but we all get around the fire and cook dinner together on the grill and
tell stories.
Yeah, totally. And no cell coverage yet, so there's no devices out, and everyone's just in bare feet running around and feeding the eels in the creek. It's good.
In a shed is a trailer loaded with, what, a dozen or so surfboards?
Yeah, some soft tops.
So you'll take them out to the beach?
Yeah, I think we will today. And then we can just, the guys can just grab them instead of carrying them all the way down. Some of them are 9 foot long and pretty heavy. So we'll have them ready to go.
As soon as the farmers arrive, they slip into their wetsuits in the farmyard and head off for a surf. Hugh Eaton farms at Pigeon Bay.
I'm here for two reasons. One is as a trustee of the local rural support trust. That's about 5%, but 95% because I just really like coming down here surfing.
We are walking across a paddock now, heading towards the beach, and it really is quite an idyllic spot, isn't it?
It is, yes, yeah. It's a classic peninsula bay, in a way, with the cliffs on both sides. It's unique with the amount of surf and sand along here. There's probably only a couple of other bays on the peninsula like this.
Is Thursday afternoon always booked out for surfing?
Yes, it is, yeah. I had a look around a while ago and realised that most of the others are about my kids' age. But they don't seem to mind.
Had you done any surfing before you started doing this?
Nothing for about 50 years, right back to holidays at the beach north of Wellington at Raumati, and sharing a huge old fiberglass board with two friends.
Yes. What do you love about surfing? Why do you love being out there on a board?
It's a little bit like some other things, like singing in a choir or going for a long run or something like that. Is just completely different and separate from day-to-day life, and gives you a break away from thinking about what's going on and just focusing on what we're doing now.
We have got to the place where Kristen has dropped off the surfboards, and so I guess now you just go and do your thing.
Yes. So these are all soft top boards for beginners. And they're great. They've been donated by different organisations.
Yes.
And surfing farmers here and around the country provides everything, really. They provide wetsuits and boards and rash vests, and then various sponsors do a barbecue afterwards. And what Kristen's trying to do here just matches the Rural Support Trust's objectives really well.
What do you do at Rural Support?
1 week in four, I'm on the 0800 number. So I'm on for 24 hours a day for a week, every fourth week.
So you can get calls any time of the day or night?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And does that happen?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's quite a challenge, really, because the phone goes and I never know whether it's going to be somebody wanting a chat or somebody wanting to... somebody really distressed or somebody potentially thinking of suicide. So there's that challenge, which is quite stressful.
Do you get trained up for those situations?
Yes, I do, but I spent 40 years as a farm advisor and evaluator, and so I've got that background as well to go with it. The idea is that the person on the 0800 number
takes the call, establishes a relationship, finds out what the issue is, talks for half an hour maybe. I talked to somebody the other day for nearly an hour and a half. But if they need it, then we've got a whole network of local volunteers who can go and visit the person and talk things over and point them in the right direction.
People on the ground, because they're people that you don't necessarily know.
No, we won't. No. And often it'll be somebody with a whole lot of things milling around in their head, just simply wanting a direction and somebody to talk to. So just talking can help consolidate somebody's ideas and help them move on to the next step of how to act and what to do and who to contact.
Well, I can see why the Trust is backing the Surfing for Farmers initiative, because it ties in with those ideas of talking, sharing, and I guess forgetting about farm life for a few hours.
Yes, it does. Well, it means, you asked me before what I enjoy about it, and I think that's pretty general. It means that people can come out for 2 or 3 hours or for an evening and do something completely different that's not related to the farm. And think about something different, do something physical.
Get smashed by the waves.
Well, if you fill your head up with seawater, it's good for clearing the brain.
Kristen, we've come down onto the beach and some of the guys are already in the water.
Yeah, they're keen. The level's going through the roof. Each week they get better and more confident. And, you know, it's not about that, but a byproduct of it, some of them really jump to it and want to get into the surfing more.
Yeah.
Some guys are just happy to go out and just fall off and get smashed around.
How often do you go surfing here?
At the moment I'm just trying to get out whenever it's good, but it's so much more special when you can share it with people. And you know, I mean, I love it when I look out the window and there's guys surfing that have come over from town. I'm like, oh cool.
Well, everyone is in the water and the waves are looking pretty good tonight. Not huge, but they're holding up pretty well. Who am I with here?
My name is Greville Walsh. So I am instructing here tonight. I'm an instructor for the farmers, and we've kind of got a group here that have got a lot of experience coming down at the moment. So well, we do get some newbies from time to time, and they get a lesson when they come down and a bit of instruction. And yeah, it's just a good night had by all. So obviously we're here for a bit of safety. If anybody got caught out in a rip or drifted out to sea, we're here to help out and make sure none of that happens.
Are there any rips tonight?
Yeah, there has been a few rips. The tide's sucking out at the moment. Nothing too major. We've got quite a few experienced surfers right out the back kind of patrolling that. So I think everybody's in safe hands there this evening.
And how good for farmers to be able to come here and do this?
It's just an amazing thing. A lot of these people are working in very isolated places here. And so I think it's actually really good for the well-being, especially the people here in the peninsula, because it is... you know, you go to one social event and it takes you 40 minutes driving, going from one bay to another. As the crow flies, everything is 5 minutes away. And as the truck drives, it's a whole load of loose parts and gravel. And
yeah
you just you get used to it here. But it's definitely a different, unusual way of life. But as you can see, it's an incredibly beautiful place. And I think that's what attracts people to living here.
Yes. And are you going out for another surf now?
Yeah, I'm going to go out for another surf now, join the guys out there. So I felt a little bit of a cramp there, so went and got hydrated and back out again.
Enjoy.
Thanks, Cosmo.
Now, Lyndon, what's it like in there?
Cold. No, it's good. Feel alive. Feel like a million bucks.
Are you going back in?
No.
I'm
last in, first out.
Did you get some good waves out there today?
Yeah. Yep, it was a bit scrappy, but it's everyone's having fun. I was down the end there, the guys are catching some big ones, so that's good.
Why do you come down and do this surfing? What does it mean to you?
Well, I look at the sea every day where I work, and I don't appreciate it. And since this Surfing for Farmers started, I've been here at the start, right from the start, and I absolutely love it. Makes you feel alive.
I guess it's also a good chance to catch up with other like-minded people.
Correct, yep, and there's a lot of people here that you wouldn't think would be doing this, but everyone loves it. You know, you sit around afterwards and have a steak and a couple of beers and a yak. No one talks about farming. The WhatsApp group's going about Tuesday night, oh, you're going or you're not going, you know, I'll pick you up or whatever, you know. So we'll see each other in the street in Akaroa, and that's the first thing everyone asks is, what were the waves like, you know, last time you were out or something like that. So that just shows you how people are into it.
Do you check the wave forecast before you come?
No. If there's nothing, there's nothing. we still go out there and have a good time.
It doesn't matter.
If it's houses coming at you, well, yeah, everyone gets out there and hangs on and gets into it.
Yeah, and you've got your kids here.
Yep. So they do surfing here on Tuesday nights, but they didn't go this week, so they thought they'd come tonight. So.
Yeah, they're doing pretty well, actually, aren't they?
Yeah, they enjoy it.
Out in the big waves?
Out in the big waves, showing everyone up.
Has this ignited something in you that you hope to keep going?
Oh, definitely. Now the kids are into it. You know, we're doing it as a family now. So the four of us are out here having a go, you know. So we wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for Surfing for Farmers.
Goffs Bay farmer Lyndon Palmer. Cosmo was also talking to Hugh Eaton, Greville Walsh and Hickory Bay farmer and Surfing for Farmers surf coach Kristen Savage, who also runs the Hickory Bay Surfing Institute from his Banks Peninsula farm.
And there are some great surfing snaps on our webpage, rnz.co.nz/countrylife. Well, that's about all we have time for this week. Thanks very much for joining us. Ka kite anō.
Bye now.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.